everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Gals of Geekdom podcast. I am, as always, your lovely host, Krista Williams, and I'm here with my equally funny and talented, amazing and smart and all the good adjectives co-hosts, Jazzy and Lizzie.
Hi, I'm Jazzy, she, they.
Hi, I'm Lizzie. She, her for today's good.
I am also a she, her.
Lizzie, you sounded like Harley Quinn when you were saying that.
I know, it's because I have a cold.
Aw, you sound like Harley Quinn when you have a cold.
I'm talking out of, like, the top of my throat.
How's everybody doing this week?
I'm good. Yep. Yesterday I saw a certain movie that's playing in way too many theaters because Disney's greedy, but
I have not seen said movie.
I saw Doctor Strange.
Same.
And Sam Raimi really decided to walk into the studio and say, "You're gonna let me have blood on the screen."
I'll say this about the movie. I think everything Raimi did was amazing.
Yeah.
God, he was working with a terrible script.
I wouldn't say terrible. I agree that it's pretty weak.
Here's the thing, and I'm going to admit this outright. Your enjoyment of this movie is going to depend on how much the style and direction is going to carry it for you.
And Sam Raimi is my, like, second or third favorite director.
Right, and I love Sam Raimi. The problem is, I need a good script, unfortunately, and Multiverse of Madness does not have one. So, again, that's just me, though. I admit it comes from what I personally want out of a movie.
Like, I'm really easy to please if your visuals are that good. If you've got Sam Raimi behind the camera, I forgive a lot of things. I even forgive Oz the Great and Powerful.
We are definitely disagreeing on that one.
I'm not saying it's good. I don't even hate it because Sam Raimi does a lot of cool. I like seeing Sam Raimi visualizing Oz.
Here's the thing. I want Raimi to do more MCU movies. I just want A, him to have more creative control, and B, give him a better fucking script, please.
I suspect that a lot of the issues that plagued the screenplay for this movie are kind of going to continue to be problems going forward.
I have that feeling too, and it's very frustrating to me because this movie. I think another problem is I already saw Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is another multiverse movie.
I want to see it. I haven't had the chance yet.
And when you see this movie, you realize just how underutilized the entire multiverse in Doctor Strange is. It's like night and fucking day. Again, I think there are elements in this movie that I think do prop it up a bit. To the point where I don't necessarily regret having seen it. I just don't think I'll watch it again. So, like, I thought the direction was great. Everything with Wanda was great.
Wilson's performance in this movie is so fucking good.
I admit, I wasn't a big Wanda fan until this movie, but this is because I think the writing for her has always been one of the biggest mixed bags in this franchise, but this one, I have to admit, I like it when Elizabeth Olsen goes full ham, so.
Well, her character lacked a lot of direction until WandaVision.
Right, but even in WandaVision, they had issues, particularly with the finale, so.
Yeah, it fell apart there too much. But I felt like, I never felt that was an issue with her character so much as that was the story, the conclusion of that show, I agree, fell apart quite a lot. But I felt like Wanda's character direction, her character finally got direction.
Fair, and that's fair. I don't necessarily disagree with that. I just think it was a bit too inconsistent for it to work 100% to me, but it was a step in the right direction, so. But yeah, with this movie, she was a far more interesting character, and one of them, I don't think it's a spoiler after the trailers to say she's the antagonist, so.
I don't think so either, but I guess some people think that might think so.
No, it's like the trailers make it obvious she's a villain in this, and I honestly like her more as a villain. Like,
well, Elizabeth Olsen just getting to go all the way up to level 12 and be just this evil, in like driven mad wicked witch.
Mm-hmm. They're
chasing after a literal child. It's daunting. I was saying to Crystal before the podcast started, I want to see Elizabeth Olsen in, like, a proper horror movie, like an actual one now, so bad.
I want to see her, like, I don't know if they'd ever do a film adaptation of fucking Resident Evil Village, but have her play Lady Dimitrescu, because I think that would be fucking amazing.
Okay, and I'm sorry if this is also someone who might consider a spoiler, but there is an extended scene where Wanda is doing a chase when she's covered in blood.
Yeah.
And they still have to make it pretty brown, but...
Yeah, I'll say this. I'll also say this. This is not... I know the MCU appeals to kids. This is not a fucking kids movie, and I kind of appreciate that part about it.
I don't know. I think... I this is my opinion. I think, like, a 12-year-old would be fine.
Yeah, like, maybe, like, kind of nearing teen years, you'd be fine.
I mean, I watched the Evil Dead movies when I was, like, 10, 11, 12, so...
I'm just saying in terms of a general audience perspective, yeah. Like, generally, I don't give a shit what kids watch, so...
I do, like, though,
Like, I watched an R-rated film at age 12, and I'm fine, so...
So, as someone who has not seen the movie yet, this entire conversation, including the talk of substance, like, has just made me more excited for it.
Like, yeah, if you're a fan of Sam Raimi's direction, there is something to like with this movie. Like, because this movie is a Sam Raimi movie full and through and through. And I think that's its strongest aspect. Again, I want Sam Raimi to do more Marvel movies if he's up for that. But I wish he has a better script. I wish it didn't.
I also want to see him do his own original films again.
Same.
Yeah, I'm
that story going around that he might be getting to make a Darkman sequel.
Yes.
See, that would be cool.
And I want it so bad. Please, please.
Will bring Liam Neeson back and all that?
Yeah, he wants to.
That's cool. They could totally do that. I mean, Neeson is in an action movie every 6 months, so.
So, yeah, when it comes to Multiverse of Madness, the things that work best are everything involving Raimi, and even some other elements, too. Direction was great. Performances, particularly Elizabeth Olsen, were great. The score from Danny Elfman was fucking god tier.
Oh, this is one of the best scores the MCU has had in a long minute.
Mm-hmm. There was one bit in the score where, I won't spoil what, but there was a bit where the music made me go, oh, shit. So I wish it was a better movie, and I wish I got more out of it, because I'd rather the MCU, if it's going to have bad movies, have more like this, where there was clearly a crack at something.
Well, there's a lot of creativity in it, even if everything doesn't come together.
Right. It is a creative movie. I just wish there was more to it. Like, it needed more, is the thing. Someone needed to go through that script, first of all, and iron out a few problems, but also just...
Like there were a lot of on-the-spot rewrites.
It did feel like that at times, because there's a character arc for Strange that feels like it was just dropped halfway through.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And because, like, Ray talked about that, how sometimes people would show up on, partway through filming, he would get told that they need to address this or that thing that happened elsewhere in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the biggest weakness of this movie, which is the story and the script, I think is the thing that was being the most studio micromanaged.
Right. And that was kind of the infuriating thing for me. Yeah. Like, just because, again, I could tell the people involved were trying to make something really fucking good here, but it ended up being a very well-made mess, I'll say.
I do also want to highlight, and I feel bad because I cannot remember her name at the moment, but the young actress who gets introduced in this movie as America Chavez. Mm-hmm. Love her. Very excited to see more with her, because I love America Chavez in the comics. I was really excited that they cast her and she was getting introduced.
I also love this was you might see this in a few clips, but she has a fucking pride pin the entire movie, and I can't help but feel like that was an intentional decision to say fuck you to Disney.
It was, yeah. Well, because she has it in the comics, because she comes from a planet where everybody's gay.
The best planet.
The best planet.
Wait. So, can I go there?
Right?
And it was great, because it wasn't even just a pride pin. It was the whole pride pin. It had the triangle with the trans triangle with the black and brown stripe. That's the progress
pin, yeah. Right?
Yeah, that one.
That's progress, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Like, I'm just imagining them putting it in and saying, you know, let's see Disney try to CG out this thing.
It's in every shot with this character.
Yeah, it's like every shot of the character, it's there and you have to accept it.
And a really pivotal scene for this character is a flashback to her childhood where she's got two moms. And you cannot cut that out.
Because no, because you cut out the whole character, basically. I'm just imagining maybe they sense if they still try to censor this for China, they just have like a black censor block following Doctor Strange the entire movie.
This reminds me of I think it's the Russian dub of Steven Universe. Apparently.
Oh yeah.
Sapphire and Ruby, they had Ruby voiced by a male voice actor. And so to get around that censorship in other countries with the dubbing. Purposefully on the gay wedding episode, Rebecca Sugar put Ruby in a dress and Sapphire in a suit.
Ah. Yeah,
just,
I remember.
Just to tell them you don't get to do this shit on my show.
No,
that was pretty great.
You'd be surprised at how, like, I've seen examples where they actually do have, like, a censor block as the character or just something equivalent. Like, in the Chinese release of Kingdom Hearts 3, they censored Winnie the Pooh, and instead of cutting out the level entirely, which would have been easy, they basically replaced Pooh with, like, a kind of shining light, I guess.
Why were they censoring Winnie the Pooh?
Because a lot of people at the time were comparing China's prime minister to Winnie the Pooh, so Winnie the Pooh was fucking right. Banned.
I remember that. Remember Oliver teaching me about that.
So yeah, when they were releasing Kingdom Hearts 3, they had to censor Winnie the Pooh.
Wow.
But I also, Sam Raimi, you know this, Crystal, of course. Sam Raimi has his love for eyeballs.
Okay, yeah, he does. He loves...
He goes ham on it with this movie.
Cool.
He
like the infamous Three Stooges gag he took in Evil Dead 2 of the eyeball.
He just really wants to fuck with your eyes in this one. It's great. Also, the king sure does make his appearance.
Okay.
Love of our life. I was waiting for it, and I was the only person in the theater who recognized him when he came up on screen.
I love this, but I also don't want to hear too much more because I want to see it.
That's fair.
As you know, Crystal, the super diehard Disney shill, you know, because that's what I'm known as, right? I don't like anything else. You just give me Disney, just pure Disney. If it's made by anyone else, I just dismiss it.
I mean, I watched a Disney movie the other day and gave it a perfect rating. I rewatched the original Lion King.
Is that the one with the gay lion?
I don't know, maybe. There was a gay meerkat, to be sure.
Scar, come on.
Oh yeah, Scar was gay. He was.
Queer-coded Jeremy Irons.
Queer-coded Jeremy Irons, yes.
No. Scar's the best part of the movie, so.
Disney has a history of queer-coded villains.
I think it's because that's why Disney villains have become less interesting in recent years, because they're not gay as fuck, so.
They stopped making them so gay.
Right, like, Scar is so like, so I was watching it, and I kind of had the remake in mind while watching it, and one thing I noticed is that, God, they stripped Scar of all his personality in the remake.
We had to make the lion less gay.
Like, he has no sass! This lion needs sass, Disney! Put that as a critic's quote on the Blu-ray. This lion needs sass. Jazzy Oliver.
I would love that.
Mother Gothel was a MILF.
Okay, Mother Gothel was like the last Disney villain I can recall liking, so. Like, I'm trying to think of one after that that I liked, but I am coming up empty, so. No, like, I love a lot of the Renaissance era Disney villains because they're so, even if they weren't queer as fuck, they were still memorable, so.
Jafar?
Renaissance era Disney villain wasn't gay?
I want to say Frollo.
Okay.
Except Frollo was a Republican, clearly.
Gaston?
Gaston was bi. I'm going to.
Yeah.
Like,
Gaston and LeFou had something on the side.
They did. Okay,
fair enough.
Like, no, I remember when people said, when the remake said LeFou is gay, I'm like, no shit, he's gay. We all knew that. You're not doing anything new.
I wonder if the Disney Plus show spinoff thing they thought about doing ever went through, if they would have like actually like doubled down on the queer themes or just said fuck it and said no.
I can almost guarantee you the answer is no.
Yeah,
but wishful thinking.
No, like, yeah, most Disney Renaissance villains were somewhere in the queer rainbow. Scar, Ursula, Gaston, Jafar.
Ursula is the least subtle one. She's literally modeled off Divine.
Right. No. And, like, Pat Carroll clearly knew what she was doing with this voice performance.
And the whole of The Little Mermaid is a very queer movie.
It is.
From top to bottom, from a lot of the different creatives that were involved with it, it was intentional.
Well, same with Beauty and the Beast. Like, Howard Ashman, who was heavily involved in making the Beast character, made a lot of the story decisions, like, based on his own experience dealing with AIDS. So, like, he was an openly gay playwright in the midst of the AIDS epidemic, so. There was a lot of a personal story going on when he was writing The Beast.
It's a very beautiful period of time.
There's a great documentary about Howard Ashman on Disney Plus, by the way.
I haven't seen it. Can I say, I fucking love The Beast in the original movie because he felt like such a well-rounded character, and then the remake missed the fucking point.
The remake missed the fucking point really hard.
Yeah, like, they made the Beast a fucking douchebag, which he kind of was. He was at a point in the original, but he still had humanity, you know?
Well, no, because here's what they did with the Beast in the remake, is they made him, like, all regal and snobby.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no. This is not what made him appealing.
Right, no, there were, like, anytime he did something bad, there was always, like, this moment where he felt genuinely guilty in the original.
Well, because the Beast in the original is full of a lot of self-hatred.
Mm-hmm.
That he kind of has to unlearn. And that doesn't, like, that's really his fatal flaw, is that he's so engrossed in his self, in this sense of self-loathing, that he's not fixing himself. He's just wallowing in the things that he hates about himself until he finds a reason to fix them.
Right. Like,
for the record, Belle does not try to fix him.
No, she doesn't. He fixes himself. Like,
for her.
Like, I love the library scene because it's a genuinely nice moment where he decides to do something nice for her, so.
But in the new one, you don't get the sense at all.
No. He shows her the library just to be a show off in the remake, and yeah. It's like, wow, guys. Amazing. You got this. I don't think you could get this more wrong if you tried. But,
watched all of the BuzzFeed listicles, and so they gave an in-text explanation.
Oh my god, I hated that, because the Beauty and the Beast remake, to me, exemplifies what I call a cinema sins mindset.
Yeah.
Where it feels the need to overexplain every single little fucking thing, and not leave anything to the imagination. Like, then that's the thing with Disney remakes, is they feel the need to overexplain shit, unless it's The Lion King, in which case it's being a shot-for-shot remake that still somehow misses the point.
I can't... This is a thing in general, or nitpicking suspension of disbelief in your movie, it drives me up a wall, and in movies drives me up a wall, but it bothers me in particular when in like animated children's fairy tales.
Right, it's like, why does this happen? It's a fairy tale, magic bitch.
I don't need you to explain to me why the village doesn't know about the castle. You don't need to put this in your text. I don't care.
Right, it didn't matter because that wasn't the point of the story.
I think too many people get caught up in trying to criticize what they consider inconsistencies or flaws in logic in film, when in reality you kind of have to do what's best served for the story. Like, I don't know. I'm tired of like really bad online film criticism. It bothers me so much.
Mm-hmm. Like. Or, like, they'll do changes in the text that changes up the story, but they don't do anything with it. Like, one example is in the Lion King remake, they did a change where they changed the dynamic between Scar and the hyenas, where in the original, he was basically bossing them around, while in the remake, the whole thing is that the hyenas are kind of their own faction, and Scar has to ask them to help with killing Mufasa, which... not a terrible idea on its own, but the way it's executed just doesn't make their allegiance make sense in the context of the film, because they still want to be mostly a shot for shot. Like, it wants to change things without changing too much, but then certain shit just ends up not making sense.
They want to change shit without committing to the change.
Right. So, like, why would these hyenas ever trust Scar in the remake if they don't have that friendship with him that was present in the original? If you want to call it a friendship. I'm just, like... In the original, they knew each other, is the thing. The hyenas liked him, generally. Instant
association.
Right. The hyenas liked him. Like, he brought him food. So hyenas were like, yes, you're my friend.
Well, you know, that's the one true way to make friends. Bring someone else food.
But no, in the remake, they don't know each other, and Scar goes up to him, and it's like, hey, by the way, we should totally kill Mufasa. That sounds like a good idea, right? And then they sing a very butchered version of Be Prepared, and I'm sad.
Yeah, they definitely neutered that song. Unfortunately.
Yep.
Which is a great song.
It is. Like... oh god,
is this our life? Are we just gonna comment on the bad Disney remakes?
Probably. I mean, I'm just gonna say most of the songs in the Lion King remake were performed horribly, so
I think the problem with me is that I don't remember.
I do. I still remember, and I hate the fact that I remember. Like, I think I
never bothered to see the Lion King remake because I hated it from its inception.
You're not missing anything. It's such a I think the funniest thing about that movie is I think the differences in quality can be attributed to one common factor these movies have. And that's James Earl Jones as Mufasa. The differences in the performance are night and day between these two versions. Like, one's actually good and clearly wanted to be there, and the other one's fucking tired.
Yeah, I know. That movie definitely was, I don't know. It took the soul from The Lion King and just ripped it out.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we were talking about this privately, but like I said, it kind of felt like a tech demo for like things that Disney wanted to try.
It's not even a good tech demo, because honestly, might be a hot take, but I thought the effects looked awful in this movie. Well, animation, because while Disney does not want to, Disney or Jon Favreau or really anyone with a brain wants to acknowledge this as an animated movie, it's a fucking animated movie.
It is an animated movie, yeah.
Yeah, but they like constantly deny that it's an animated movie. Like, they don't want to say it is. And it's so annoying because this is a computer. There's literally only one shot in the movie that's live action, and that's the opening sunrise. That's it. Everything else was animated. But I guess that sunrise allows them to justify, no, it's not an animated movie.
You know, but it was, no, they, Jazzy, don't you know, they actually went and filmed and trained those animals to do those things. It was completely live action.
Oh, I'm sure. They looked so real and not at all like a computer made them.
No, they were real.
Also,
they even learned how to talk. It was pretty amazing.
Well, the dialogue was insipid, so I feel bad for those animals having to talk, so.
No, it's okay. They're joining the cast of Oppenheimer. So,
this movie was bad.
I can't with the Oppenheimer casting. It's too many people.
It's too many cooks.
It's just too many people. No, there's no way anybody except for maybe Cillian Murphy is gonna have like a particularly the space to have a particularly like deep or interesting exploration of their character.
That sounds fascinating.
Oh, wait, too many people. Wait. Speaking of too many people, we have beamed in a very special a guest. Would you like to introduce yourself to the audience?
I am a very flustered and exasperated Vera Wild from Council of Geeks, who should have been here much earlier, except my entire afternoon was an absolute clusterfuck. So,
as is life, we started this late. It all happened. Everything, everything goes to hell. That's the show.
Well, then it's in the spirit of the show, I suppose.
Yes, and we were having a conversation that was leading off of bitching about the Disney live-action remake / animated Lion King remake. Also talking about how there's too many people on Oppenheimer. So, you know, okay. Yeah, our teeing up for this conversation is not.
So J.K. Rowling finally acknowledged to some extent that women are losing access to abortion.
Oh, great. It only took her 4 days while she was busy liking all the people who were at the turf picnic. Yeah.
And what's great about it is that she did it while dunking on a trans woman. So, you know.
Well, fucking course she did.
I never thought she could. I didn't think at this point she could disappoint me more.
I know. No, like that's legitimate, because yesterday I saw that people were saying on Twitter, you know, she's not saying a single thing about this. And I honestly thought to myself, that can't possibly be true. Like, I for some reason, I actually send some benefit of that. Like, that can't be true. And I go to her Twitter feed, and at least at the time that I went there, which was yesterday, she actually had not posted anything since the day before the leak happened. And initially I was like, maybe she hasn't been on Twitter. Then I go and check her likes. I'm like, no, she's been liking stuff. She's been liking stuff right up to like 40 minutes ago. Only one of which vaguely referenced reproductive rights, and everything else was turf shit.
And listen, if she, if not for all of the rampant Twitter gender critical bullshit, if that was not, let's pretend that wasn't a thing she's been doing the last three or whatever years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw, oh, this, what is she, like 65-year-old woman isn't talking about this on Twitter. I really wouldn't think much of it. But if you're building, trying to, like, fancy yourself as this champion of women's rights and protection right now.
Yep. That's the thing, isn't it? Somebody tweeted me, like, a cartoon, which was like this image, and it just said women's rights, and it's on fire. And it was just done with stick figures. There's these people like throwing buckets of water, you know, with symbols for women on them. And one of them is also has the trans flag. And they're like turning to this person marked gender critical. And they're saying, won't you help us save these rights? And, you know, the gender critical person is looking at the burning sign that says women's rights and says, define women.
Oh.
Just standing there, arms folded. And it was too accurate to even be funny.
Right?
It's funny, but it's also really depressing.
Sometimes my TikTok algorithm glitches. Because did ask the other day, got a video on my For You page from a TERF. Blaming, like unironically being like, this is because of trans women. And I'm like, what are you talking about? What does this mean?
See, like, there's a part of me that kind of wants to unravel what bizarro world logic could ever lead to that, except I can't listen to these people talk for more than 5 seconds.
Because there's no logic. But it's emotion.
I'm so confused. Your video was like, you see, like lesbians in the 70s warned you that if you let men pretend to be women, we were gonna lose our rights. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Oh.
What are you talking? What about the overturning of Roe v. Wade? What? Tell me. I need to see the line in your head. I need you to explain this to me.
There isn't one.
No, hatred has no rationality.
No, it. I mean, that's the core of bigotry. It is unreasonable hatred. So there isn't really a reason. You will occasionally find rationalizations. Lately, it doesn't.
Doesn't what?
I think they're cut out.
Oh. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I said that there really is no reason and there's no rationale. Occasionally you'll get rationalizations, although lately they don't even seem to have the energy for that.
They don't care anymore.
It feels like that meme of the kid on the bike.
Yeah.
Where he sticks on his bike, he sticks his stick in the wheel. And he's like, this is trans women's fault. I just
gender criticals are that Eric Andre meme where they're shooting.
Why would trans women do that?
Oh yeah.
God, I love when Eric Andre is applicable to a situation. It's then I'm laughing my ass off. It hides the pain.
Didn't Eric Andre get an NFT or something like that?
I think at one point, but then that died right where it started. So
the list of people who I'm not all of them I respected, but the list of people who my estimation of immediately dropped because I caught them shilling crypto somewhere or NFTs. I'm like, oh, for God's sake.
But don't you know that NFTs are the future? You know, must it's be funny crazy because
there was a point where a lot of celebrities were doing them and then suddenly crypto just dropped off the map and then they just silently backed away.
I honestly very legitimately think Folding Ideas video line goes up did a real big blow to them. Because it cut through everything, but also in a way that acknowledged all of the nonsense that they speak. Because, like, they try and obscure what they do with these weird languages and all this stuff. And, like, he did actually – this is why the video is 2 hours long. But he did actually deal with that while also boiling it down and being like, and here's why it's a scam.
Yeah, that I need to go back to finish it because it is 2 hours long. But
I didn't know Folding Ideas did an NFT video. I might have to watch it now.
You should. Oh, it's excellent. Yeah,
you should. It's. I think watching it in parts to absorb
it properly. Because sometimes with videos that long, you start to.
And that's fair enough. I think it's actually his most viewed video at this point.
Which is funny because I had heard of him after he did the video on that review of The Wall that Nostalgia Critic did.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, do we get to go into making fun of the Nostalgia Critic Hour? I love doing that.
Yes.
Sure, why not? I like calling Doug Walker a piece of shit.
I haven't paid attention to the Nostalgia Critic in, oh god, what are we now, 4 years? Is that how long it's been since everything went to hell?
I think so, because after 2018? I think it was 2018, right?
Yeah, I think so.
That absolutely tracks. Oh my gosh, it's been 4 years.
So, because... I remember
hashtag change the channel.
Change the channel mixed in with the Vic Mignogna stuff too.
I still don't know how that happened.
Because of Kalen.
I know, like, and I know where it got mixed. I just, people drew this connecting line between it that was weird because these were
there was a lot of people on the pro Vic side of that accused Kalen of knowing Justin Carmichael, aka Jew Wario, did a lot of bad shit when she had no clue. So
yeah, there was a lot of bleed over with stuff going on there, but yeah, I have, like, honestly, the only time Channel Awesome has blipped on my radar at all since then was when everybody got pissed off at The Wall review. Because
The Wall review is such a spectacle in how god fucking awful it is.
And also just how incredibly disrespectful it is. Like,
no, Doug Walker, and this is the thing, now that I'm sitting here about to be a graduate student in film studies, and working on about to spend the next 2 years working on my thesis, and like with my whole ass film degree, there's something, Doug, I've come to this conclusion, is that Doug Walker has convinced a whole generation of people that they're like snarkily noticing that there's strings in an action scene is equivalent to my film degree.
I would say between him and CinemaSins, there was a lot of damage done. Like, the one thing I'll say in a very tepid defense of Walker, and I do mean tepid, is that I don't think there's an exceptional harm in his usual shtick when it's aimed at pointing out that something like the Lorax movie is a piece of corporatized crap. However, his usual stick really fails when pointed at something that is a deeply personal piece of art like The Wall.
Well, this is the problem, is his whole shtick from the joke in 2007 when he started doing this. The joke, the whole point was that he was breaking down movies he was, bad movies that he enjoyed in the 80s, which were all corporate pieces of shit. Not all, not
right. There was a brand there, like the nostalgia, like that's where the name came from, Nostalgia Critic.
Exactly, it meant something, and the bit, like, there's lots of jokes from those old videos that do not age well, but the bit worked in that context.
Right.
And then he starts applying it to other things, especially like it's like you said, Vera, the most egregious when he's applying it to like genuinely great works of art, like The Wall.
Well, I'm not even sure. I love The Wall. I'd hesitate calling it great, but it is incredibly personal, incredibly artistically inclined, definitely. And like
out of his depth with it.
Oh yeah, like, oh, way out of his depth.
He reveals and the shallowness of his thought when he tries to apply this to that.
Well, like when you see him engaging in certain works, and this was apparent as early as I want to say kind of the latter days of what I'd call classic nostalgic critic, I guess, if we have no other word for it.
Basically, well, I mean, if you take the break where he actually stopped doing it for a while as a delineation, sure.
Right, yeah, like pre-retirement, we'll say. So pre-retirement nostalgia critic. There was a point where late into that era, he was doing, like, reviews of films that it's just clear he didn't understand. Like, his review of Moulin Rouge, which has a lot of shit that if you go back and look, has some shit that would become exemplified in his modern reviews, like a lot of stupid shit. It's clear he does not understand what tone the film was going for.
Okay, if there's a thing that is very apparent to me, Doug Walker, and I'm not necessarily saying that Moulin Rouge is entirely camp, although it is campy.
Mm-hmm.
If it's very apparent to me that Doug Walker doesn't understand camp, and he doesn't understand
melodrama.
Melodrama. Thank you. That was what I was looking for.
Yeah, he doesn't understand things that are just that come across as weird to him. Like I remember way back when he did his 200th episode, it was on Ponyo, which he was mostly positive of, but you can tell he was kind of reaching for issues with that movie because it's like, oh, Ponyo is a really weird movie, and I'm like, yes, it is. It's made by Hayao Miyazaki. Have you been living under a rock?
See, here's the thing. I do feel slightly bad for him creatively, and what I mean by that is you can tell during the end of that original run that yeah, he is reaching because he burned through all the stuff he actually had genuine nostalgia for. Mm-hmm. And as he moved closer to the present, you could tell his heart wasn't in it. It's why he stopped doing it. Unfortunately, he'd made this his career and he is not talented or creative enough to have his other ideas work. Not, and it's arguable whether nostalgia critic works or not, but it was at least still bankable.
Right,
and
so it was
he had to go back to it, and I feel a little bit bad because he tried to leave it. He's just not talented enough to do anything else.
Well, and a big place you see it starting to fall and fail is when he attempts to talk about other people's nostalgic properties.
Mm.
That's when it starts to get really, really irritating. Like, specifically his video. Every single time he's ever talked about Hocus Pocus, it always drives me up a wall. Because he was clearly like an older teenager when that came out, which whatever.
Right.
And so like I remember his whole clipless review of it, which that's also stupid because it's just him doing bad sketch comedy.
It's demo reel 2.0, let's be real.
But I remember all his clipless review, I remember watching it and just very apparent that he doesn't seem to understand that people can be nostalgic for things that happened after his childhood.
Mm.
He doesn't get this. He doesn't get that people were children after him.
Right, right. I kind of felt the same when he reviewed Sailor Moon. And don't get me wrong, I'm not defending Sailor Moon as high art, but but it's very clear, if you've ever watched even like just a few episodes of Sailor Moon, it's clear watching his review that he doesn't get it, and I get was probably the joke, but it doesn't read well.
It reminds me also, and this wasn't like an official nostalgia critic review, it was Doug and Rob would sometimes do these like straight reviews basically after they saw a new movie.
Right.
And I remember when Zootopia came out. And, like, Zootopia is not a perfect movie, but when Zootopia came out and he basically was mocking that movie as basically being like, we're not children and why do we don't need a talking bunny to teach us that racism is bad, which, first of all, yes, actually, most American adults do. But yeah. Putting aside for a second, I remember this driving me crazy. Like, yes, Doug, you're like 40. This movie is for 7-year-olds.
Right, it's... But like he doesn't know how to engage with a lot of movies made for adults either. Like he'll point out what he perceives as a plot hole when no, it isn't. The movie explained this fine. Like I remember I was fucking annoyed with his review of Logan because he spent like 5 minutes going on about how the movie is vague about the really bad thing Charles Xavier did
and it's
how
it's really never... not
right. It like, first of all, throughout, like, the entire first half, the implications are very clear. Second of all, in case it was too subtle for you, there's a radio announcer that outright says it at a point.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, thinking back, I'm realizing in hindsight that back when I did watch Nostalgia Critic, because I did at one point.
Oh, me too. I was a self-admitted fan at the time.
Yeah, yes. The stuff of his that I liked best was movies that I either hadn't seen or didn't like.
It makes sense. Or, like, his earliest stuff when he was just kind of more poking at, like what the brand was, the nostalgia brand.
Yeah.
You know, older films from the 80s and 90s that have a certain reputation about them. But the problem is, when you're so popular and you're doing a weekly video series, you kind of run out of those ones. Like, that's the essential failing. I mean, other than the fact that he has like no sense of media literacy about a lot of things.
He doesn't understand that a movie doesn't need to. Again, it's the CinemaSins mindset of thinking a movie needs to explain every little thing. Like, I remember. He did a review of an animated movie once called Quest for Camelot, and he was spending like half of that movie going, "Why is there magic shit in the forest? Doug, it's called The Enchanted Forest. Why do you think?"
Why do you need this explained to you?
And I'm not even saying Quest for Camelot is that good a movie. It's not, but it's an enchanted forest. It doesn't need to explain this.
Yeah, you know, I really do wonder if he and like the guys from CinemaSins, if the niche that they've fallen into professionally has actually stunted any hope they would have had of developing proper critical faculties, because if they actually knew and understood the depths of these things, they wouldn't make what they make.
Right. And it's like, the thing is, I think that kind of style of reviewing is kind of just lost its luster in terms of just general audience appeal, because nowadays people want to watch hours long essays about dumb shit, which I'm totally up for. Like, I mean, I'm totally guilty of this. I watched a 2.5 hour video of a gay furry talking about why Lion King remake is bad, but
it is. Holy shit, is it?
Yeah. But I find I prefer videos where there's an engagement with the media, even if the person doesn't like the media.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I would much rather have somebody go into probably more depth than is necessary as to why something does or doesn't work than just shout exaggeratedly for 20 minutes.
Right.
Yeah. And I say that as someone who occasionally shouts exaggeratedly for 20 minutes.
Same. And it's not even that there isn't critics that still do this that I don't like. I mean, while his quality is mixed, I'll still watch Angry Video Game Nerd because it's a character. Like, it's very clear that this is still a character.
I'm not gonna like out my actual name, but I was on the set and I'm in the credits under my dead name for his movie. Oh. I was one of the extras.
I hope you had fun. That's all I'm gonna say, because I don't like that movie.
John Ralph grew up.
He's
still doing his 2007 shtick.
Right. Like, you may not like some of his more modern content, and even I'll admit it's a mixed bag, but there's still at least an attempt to evolve it and try to keep things fresh, so that I can respect, even if it doesn't work.
Well, I think there's a whole bunch of people who came out of Channel Awesome who are basically doing the same thing they were doing 10 years ago, but have still managed to inject more nuance into it. You know, like Dominic Noble, Todd in the Shadows. They're still
Bayless.
We don't stand Dom Noble on this podcast.
Okay.
For him.
I apologize. I wasn't standing. I was talking about quality of work, but I'm saying that these are folks who effectively are still doing their same bit, but it's not as shallow as it was if you were to go back 5 years ago.
Right. Like, for example, I was watching Phaelus's most recent review. I don't know how recent it was, actually, but he was reviewing the newest Resident Evil film, Welcome to Raccoon City. And it's still similar to how he's done reviews always, but I think what's kept someone like Phaelus working as a content creator is that there's clear engagement with the material, so. Like, there's an attempt to, while there is snark, while there is jokes, there is an attempt to understand where the film, where the intent was, so.
Bayliss also does, like, a fuck ton of research.
Yeah, yeah, he does.
Everything is, no matter how obscure. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there's something I appreciate and respect about that. I don't agree with everything he says and thinks, but.
Right, like, you know, you can still do this kind of Nostalgia Critic-esque review style, but you gotta do something more with it nowadays. Like, there needs to be something to, as a hook, whether it be, like I said, engagement with material, or just maybe even just general absurdity of the topic, I don't know.
If we're also talking about Channel Awesome alum, another guest of our show,
all right.
Still
oh,
does
yeah.
stuff, Tony.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Oh yeah.
Has Tony functionally retired?
He seems to have. Yeah.
I would say yes. I mean, he's doing Escape from Walt Disney, which is a great podcast if you haven't listened.
I love listening to that podcast. But it's I understand why. It's very clear that he was working himself very, very hard in a perfectionist lens on that, and it probably wasn't very good for his mental health. But it's a shame in the extent that I always thought that each video he made was great.
Yeah, absolutely. Even now, like, going back to that stuff, it's great. Great content. Linkara. Linkara's still doing stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Linkara's been still pretty, like, do it working with a format close to how he's always done it, but still improved in areas that needed improving, so.
And shifted, yeah. Changing things up, too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead,
like,
sorry.
If you watch more recent Linkara episodes, one thing you'll notice is that he changed the theme song a bit to be a little less aggressive towards specific people.
Well, yeah, he took out specific named call-outs from the theme song. And, like, when it is relevant, he does acknowledge, like, look, I've been wrong about some of these things that I've – the way that I've approached them in the past. And so that helps.
Mm-hmm. I think when you've been creating content, or at least being vocal about certain things on the internet for as long as you have, you're going to change as a person. Like, you're not going to
help. I hope so, dear God.
I hope so.
Like, 15 years since most of these people started doing this, I would hope most of them grew up.
I mean, I've been on YouTube for a decade now, so, yeah.
I will say back to, kind of quickly, not to like, be parasocial or whatever, but I met James Rolfe twice, once on the set of the film and once at San Diego Comic-Con, and I will say that it's obvious that he's mature.
Right.
Like he's not like some of the other people who still have that sort of man-child thought process and attitude about them. So but
it's hard to change when your job is literally holding on to that mentality to at least some degree.
That is very true, which I think the internet has a certain way of, if you're given enough of something, you expect a constant stream of said thing, like being praised for making the same content, cough, cough, Doug. So it forces you to not evolve or grow in any real emotional way, because you're like, oh, well, I'm doing this right. I need to just keep doing this and hammering this in. And anyone that gets into my little ego bubble is just a hater.
Which, I mean, like, all, again, to be fair, like, flat-out haters do exist. I probably... It's a daily thing for me to go in and clear out my comments.
Fair enough.
Yeah, existing as trans online is,
yes,
is just kind of...
I do have multiple layers at which I deal with this shit, to be fair and give full context on that, but yeah. But, like, the first time I ever had a commenter tell me that I should kill myself was... me saying that the DCEU at the time
absolutely sucked. And this was after Batman v Superman came out, and someone told me I should kill myself for not liking it. So,
oh my God, you didn't like the cinematic masterpiece.
I know, and I wasn't out yet. So, like, I've seen it absent the trans shit.
Yeah, wait, so you didn't like a bad movie? What? Shocking.
How dare I? How dare I?
I think someone indirectly...
A pop cultural thing, Vera. You're not allowed to do that.
I think someone indirectly, told me to end myself on, in an offhanded, not directly replying to me because I'm not on this site, Kiwi Farms comment when they found out that, A, I'm trans, 2, B, I mean, I voice in Yaoi, so.
Ah. Well,
oh yes. My God, I'm a trans woman who voiced in a Yaoi game. I am the scum of the fucking earth. Punish me, daddy.
Clearly. And don't worry about it. There are good movies that I hate, too. So, you know, I can throw my bile around.
Fair enough.
I don't think, weirdly enough, as vocal as I am, I don't think I get a lot of comments that tell me to outright kill myself outside of, like, you know, getting the suicide rate number thrown at me and the memes. Like, I get that, which is horrendous in and of itself, but that's fucking the internet for you.
What's funny I remember... is most of that shit, the first time it gets thrown at me, I have to look it up because I don't know what the hell they're on about. And then I'm like, oh, okay, block.
there was like one person who had messaged me who was like, who was saying I was again sinful for being one trans too. Again, they always focus on the fucking fact that I'm in a visual novel that has dicks in it.
Harlot.
Everyone's like, why were you in that game? And I'm like, one, it was fun. Two, they paid me, bitch.
Okay. I have a thing I want to give my hot take about.
Oh, no. Go ahead, Lizzie.
I think that historically significant clothing that is made out of extremely fragile material and is too small to fit on a person's body should not be worn on the red carpet.
I agree with you.
I think... Marilyn Monroe wanted to be able to sue her imitators because she hated them so much.
Oh, is that? I'm assuming this is Met Gala.
Yeah.
Okay. I forget that the Met Gala exists every year. It's the same with the Super Bowl. I forget it's a thing until it clogs up my feed.
Times every year, though. That's what always throws me. People will be like, it's the Met Gala. I'm like, didn't the Met Gala happen like 9 months ago? I was like, yeah. Why?
Jazzy, did you see any of that too?
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
So Marilyn Monroe, when she sang Happy Birthday to John F. Kennedy, had a very, very delicate sheer dress handmade specifically for her to fit onto her body. As she said, the words were, I want a dress only Marilyn Monroe could ever wear. And it's specifically made to match her skin tone so it looks like she's wearing crystals.
Hmm.
It's very beautiful, it's very delicate, and it's a 60-year-old dress, and it's a historical artifact that Kim Kardashian stretched out and crash dieted and put on to walk down a red carpet for 10 minutes.
Okay.
And I'm about it. And
I mean, that's kind of what, like, I get that you're upset and I will take nothing away from you, but like, I'm not a fashion person.
Listen, if people, I've seen many people be like, why do you people care? It's just a dress.
Oh, no. I get why you care. I absolutely get why you care.
And you don't have to care. I get it if someone okay, but like I care and it matters. Is this the end of the world? No, but I think it shows. I think it shows A, that the Ripley's, that is not a reputable museum, shouldn't be allowed to purchase and hold items this delicate.
Obviously. Lizzie, you're going full Indiana Jones. This belongs in a museum.
It belongs in a museum.
So do you.
Museums, because they clearly can't be trusted to take care of it and be responsible with it. I think it's disrespectful.
Didn't they also give her part of
hair? Which is gross. That's
really weird.
Really weird. That's dehumanizing.
Why does anyone even have her hair? What?
Right. The fact that it exists by itself is weird and gross.
Yeah, I'm kind of hung up on that, on step one of this whole process.
But you know what? Okay, so it does. So it's sitting in a museum. Okay. And then they just gifted it to fucking Kim Kardashian, to a private citizen who's not a family member, who's not like someone who knew her. And that's so weird.
It's gross.
It's so weird and it's so gross and it's so dehumanizing. Marilyn Monroe is probably amongst the most exploited human beings who ever lived, up there with like Shirley Temple and Britney Spears and the Olsen twins. Like, it's just by the entertainment industry, I should be clear. There's obviously worse humans.
that's a clarification worth making.
There is someone I did want to bring up though, because I was actually watching your video on them, Vera. It was Ezra Miller. I think you made a great video on it, by the way.
That, holy crap. what a freaking mess. Like, I think they're still in Hawaii. I haven't checked lately, but it annoys me on principle that they live in the same state as me.
But, have either of you been paying attention, Jazzy or Lizzie, to the Ezra stuff?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sad to say that it has crossed my feed more than once, so.
Every time that they are in the news, it is for a different unhinged thing.
Yeah.
The vibe which varies.
It does. And, like, the thing is, and this was, like, the one thing I avoided when I did a video on it, that, like, what really bothers me about the conversation around this is so many people are trying to diagnose them.
Right.
You know, with something like, oh, I bet they have this mental problem, that mental problem. It's like, you're not their freaking doctor. Most of you have no clinical training. Shut the hell up. Are they going through a mental illness crisis? I don't know. Until somebody who is of whom it's any of their business makes it public, it ain't my freaking business.
This is one of the more toxic elements of the internet, is and especially with the internet and memification of, like, you know, actual mental health issues and buzzwords, is that people, it's really, really popular for just strangers on the internet to try and diagnose every single person they don't like with a personality disorder.
Well, the thing is, it's not even just being thrown at them as, like, someone who they don't like. I would see people, like, in my comments on that video, you know, trying to be very generous towards them or even trying to defend them and looking, but still doing the same thing of trying to diagnose them with something, but coming at it from an angle of trying to find a rationale under which they could defend them. And I find it gross either way.
No, I agree. Completely. That is a weird thing for you to, as someone who obviously doesn't fucking know them, you know, doesn't know anything, to try and, like, rationalize it for your own kind of selfish reasons.
Yeah. Whether it's to make you feel better about, you know, still taking in their entertainment, or justify in, like, writing them off, it's still just that's a gross way to process anyone's mental state.
Right. Well,
oh my gosh, quick. I have to go in a sec, but I need to touch on this. Speaking of gross behavior on the way people conduct themselves on the internet, is anyone else very uncomfortable with the way people are treating a trial about defamation surrounding domestic abuse like it's a WWE match?
I am really, 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 really trying not to, like, engage with any of that.
I have,
get, like, online, you know?
I'm trying to not come out with a big harsh stance about it, because it's very clear that people have decided who they're going to believe and are not really listening to anything else being said. But the way the internet is treating this is very concerning to me.
I mean, here's the thing. I'm old enough to remember the OJ trial.
I know it's not a new phenomenon.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's super, super, super not. And like, I'm not disagreeing with you. It is kind of gross to see it happen, in my case, again, you know, where something just captures the national attention and it's treated like getting a daily episode of a soap opera. And like, it's a legal proceeding directly affecting these people's lives. And why the fuck are there even cameras in there broadcasting?
That was my question. Why is that
still a thing that happens?
Like, why are we doing this? You're getting so many people, and it's resulting in a lot of misinformation about domestic violence. Again, I'm not going to sit here and say who I think is a liar and who I think is telling the truth and what I think happened with this. I'm not going to do it, because there's too much conflicting information, I think, for the public to even have anything to say about it. But I'm seeing so much misinformation going around about people trying to like say, well, this is how domestic abuse victims act. There is not a one way that a domestic abuse victim tells their story or acts in a courtroom.
There's not one perfect, quote unquote, perfect victim, you know.
And I think especially in a case like this, where it's very clear that neither of these people are would be quote unquote perfect victims. It's so messy, and it's so.
I feel like it's this weird fucked up continuation backlash thing, as well, that kind of ties into like the whole Vic situation. Just follow where I'm going in terms of like the Me Too movement started. Bringing accountability to abusers, right? And there's been this kind of continued growing fascist underbelly since at least online. I know it's been in our country since its foundation, but I would say in specific internet little circles, growing and growing since like what, 2014, 2015, something like that.
I would say it started leaking into the mainstream around then is what I would say.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's. So I feel like it's all tied together. Even this Depp trial is connected back to Me Too, but also connected further back to this sort of underbelly. If you understand what I'm trying to get at.
No, I do. I know what you mean. That's concerning to me too. I am seeing a fair few people. I'm seeing some people with that concern who seem to have really planted themselves in the position of, if Amber Heard is lying, to say that Amber Heard is lying sets a bad precedent for the progress we made with Me Too. And they seem like they're kind of digging their heels on that in a way that I don't think is productive. I'm like, yes, but what if she was lying, which there's a decent amount of evidence that she might have been. And I'm not saying that she was or she wasn't, but it's like this is not productive. And throwing your flag in the sand for one of these two people, you rich celebrities you don't know, who were in a very clearly toxic and abusive relationship with each other.
Another thing is, if your concern is the bigger picture and the progress made by Me Too, this was an inevitability. Whether it was Amber Heard or anybody else, at some point eventually there was going to be a high profile case that undermines that, like, it's something that the trans community does all the freaking time on the rare occasions that a trans person gets in trouble for any kind of sexual deviancy. All the rest of us go, ah, God. But like, it happens. So if your concern is the big picture, you don't hammer on the specific instance. You should have been freaking prepared for the fact that this was going to happen eventually. And you should have had your arguments for why it doesn't matter that it happened once already loaded. Ah.
I think it's really telling how this case in particular, everyone here is being like, not wanting to plant a specific like flag in either side, that we don't want to touch certain parts of this with a 10-foot pole.
Oh dear God, like you have no idea. I have never talked in specific about their relationship, but I have in a couple of videos had to talk about the fallout from stuff connected to them, and every time the comment sections were a fucking nightmare. And I have never made my own opinion clear on this publicly ever, and I won't.
The other thing driving me a little bit up the wall from the Johnny Depp side of things are a lot of people claiming that like this accusation from Amber Heard and that alone ruined his career. And this rewriting of history, that's very frustrating for me. Johnny Depp was already destroying his own career.
Well, now that one annoys me because the point at which actually, I mean, you could talk box office and things like Lone Ranger, and that's kind of a different conversation. But if you want to talk just his public image and why he was let go from Fantastic Beasts, for which he should actually be thanking
his
bad PR for
it. I just want to say, people bring that up all the time, the fact that he got fired from Fantastic Beasts, and I'm like, one, he dodged a bullet. Two, he was getting paid either way because he already started filming for that movie and his contract tells him that they need to pay him for the full thing.
They had to buy out his contract. But what got him fired wasn't any of her accusations. It was because he tried to sue the UK tabloids and lost. That's why he got fired, because the instant he lost that lawsuit, every single tabloid in the UK won the legal right to call him a wife beater in headlines. And even though Warner Brothers is an American corporation, the Harry Potter franchise is considered a UK property. So the fact that what was considered the home ground tabloids could call one of the major stars a wife beater in print, they were like, no, go away.
Well, and I remember like specifically, and again, I'm not going to say that my sister is necessarily standing out here being like Johnny Depp is innocent, because she's not. But my sister said something along the lines the other day of like, you know, I feel like he got fired because of these accusations, not because he was doing, and like he wasn't doing his job badly. Like, she gave a list of things, like, and I had to be like, I'm going to stop you right there. Johnny Depp was doing his job badly. Johnny Depp got fired specifically, Pirates of the Caribbean specifically, because he was showing up to set high and drunk, hours late, needing to have lines fed to him through an earpiece, and that movie didn't even make a profit back for the studio. Johnny Depp was doing his job badly. And I know that there'll be people who will argue that maybe that's probably, and it probably is related in some capacity to the issues within that relationship at the time, but like...
I mean, like, just on a professional level, if you can't do the job professionally, then don't take the job.
He was losing.
And if you're going to take the job, you have a professional obligation.
I feel like Vin Diesel could learn that lesson right now.
So, you know, it's a back and forth. Also, just another side note, because I've said this, I say this all the time. Whenever anybody wants to get into why isn't this actor who did a cancelable thing not fired from X, Y, and Z, regardless of whatever that actor may or may not have done, it's not really the point. I'll see people specifically, why isn't Amber Heard fired when Johnny Depp was fired right away? And my answer to that is because they have different agents and different contracts.
Right. And the franchises that they're in are headed by different executives.
Exactly. They're because different people.
Yeah, the side of Warner Brothers that's handling DC doesn't coordinate with the side that's handling the Harry Potter franchise. They don't have to. That would be a nightmare to try to do. They're not sending memos going, you must be philosophically consistent because we made this move in our hiring practice. No!
No. It's just showing to me that a lot of people don't know how, like, getting these jobs works.
Right. And it's like, with something like DC, you have, like, obviously with Harry Potter, this is the case too, but like, you know, people always, whenever I've had friends mention, it's like, oh, why haven't they fired Amber Heard? And I'm like, they probably already had a contract, a multi-picture contract with her with when she signed on for the first movie that they can't so easily buy her out from. So
like, it's different. Her contract is probably very different than Johnny's was. Like, it's really not that complicated, and it always frustrates me. It's the same thing when everybody with West Side Story was like, why didn't you do, like, I don't remember which director it was, but did with Kevin Spacey. And it's like, because with Ansel Elgort, because Ansel Elgort was the lead of the film.
He already filmed it.
Circumstance. He's in almost every scene. You can't digitally replace him the same way you could a different actor in a completely different movie who was in that movie for like 8 minutes.
It is frustrating when people bring up the all the money in the world comparison, because first of all, I don't think people realize how expensive that was. It cost them $10 million to do those reshoots. The biggest expense being having to pay the other lead actors to come back in and reshoot with Christopher Plummer. But that cost them $10 million. The original budget for the film was 40. It cost them an additional 25% of their original production budget to do that. A, and B, it was way more viable because it was a supporting character in a drama. The idea of recasting your male lead in a musical, reshoot all the dance shit? Are you nuts?
Oh, yeah. And here's another thing that I also want to point out in terms of the Amber Heard situation. I'm not going to say my own position on that entire thing.
This is a landmine we're just all dancing right around.
I'm just going to say, even if that situation wasn't happening, I'd imagine that if they didn't have a contract with Amber Heard, they wouldn't want this character playing a big role in the second movie anyway, considering her performance was one of the biggest points of criticism the original Aquaman had, one that I agree with, because regardless of what I think of her as a person, her performance is fucking terrible, so.
She's not a great actress, and that's fine. I don't really care. That's besides the point.
Right.
See, the thing is, I actually don't know what I think about her performance, because I grade Aquaman on the weirdest curve in the world, because I don't think it's trying to be a good movie by most standard metrics. So I don't know how to judge it.
Here's the thing. As a movie, I fucking love Aquaman. It's fucking dumb, and in many respects, it's not a good movie, but I fucking love it anyway. Because it's a movie that kind of knew it was fucking dumb and had fun with it.
Julie Andrews' voice is a sea monster. What the fucking fuck else can you say?
Right? It's amazing. like I love this movie because it's so indulgent in how stupid it is.
See, well, here's the thing. I have one of those, I do enjoy Aquaman, but the one that I love and I know is terrible is, this is an older one, so this is me showing my age again. It's not that old, but anyways. The first live-action G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra.
I barely remember that movie, actually. But I guess you could also say I kind of have the same love for the first Transformers, the first Michael Bay Transformers movie. It's fucking bad, but
see, the thing is with that first G.I. Joe movie, which, like, most people have forgotten even happened, but I love it because I remember being in the theater and, like, I have no nostalgia for G.I. Joe. I didn't watch the cartoon. I didn't play with it. My mother actually wouldn't let me. She had major issues with the very concept of G.I. Joe. But what it reminded me of at its core was, like, as a kid playing with my action figures with my friends, because, like, there's one scene in that movie that I can always specifically cite that just feels like when little kids are playing with action figures and they're just trying to one-up each other. And they're like, okay, well, my guys get in this car and they get away from your guys. Oh, but my guys are in this car that has machine guns on it. So we're chasing your guys. Oh, well, we're going to shoot missiles. Yeah, well, I've got a ninja. And it's that constant one-upsmanship that makes no sense outside of the context of just throw all the toys at each other. And I fucking love it.
But yeah, I think the point is a movie doesn't necessarily have to be good to be entertaining. So.
Oh, hell no.
I am a fan of Troma, so I understand this.
I really loved Aquaman on the basis of the fact that I sat through that movie and I was like, 7-year-old me is one of my favorite thing in the whole world.
No, like, yeah, it's just I don't know. And after, I don't know, after the first batch of DC films were kind of a slog to go through, with the exception of Wonder Woman, which I thought was great, like, it was kind of refreshing to have this one movie that was like, fuck it, we're gonna be stupid and we're gonna have fun. So.
Yeah, that was a good time. It is nice when they can remember to be fun. And honestly, that's a problem that's not limited to the DC movies. DC Comics doesn't remember to be fun very much, and hasn't for about almost 20 years now.
I think the movies have kind of been kind of going into a more fun direction with more recent titles. So I think
they've been getting there with, you know, Shazam and
the Suicide Squad, which was fucking Suicide Squad,
I wish I'd liked that movie more, but I'll tell you what, I love the hell out of Peacemaker.
I love the Suicide Squad. That's actually my favorite of the entirety of the DCEU.
Same.
I think that's my favorite Shazam.
Mine would be Birds of Prey. And the Suicide Squad.
I think I'm with you on Birds of Prey.
Birds of Prey is so great.
Although, honestly, the more I think about it, I need to watch it again. I actually really liked The Batman, and I was primed to hate it.
I liked it. I don't think I like it more than I like any of the other ones we just talked about, TBH, but I liked it.
I loved it a lot. I loved having a Batman movie where he's solving a mystery.
I know.
I want to have, for the show, just a future thing pinned to have a really more in-depth spoiler discussion about the Batman.
That'd be game. We should have Ash on for that one.
Probably should. But I will say that I finally got a chance to watch it. And I fucking loved it. I may or may not have pranked someone in this call about it.
Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
No, this is a podcast. I cannot and will not shut up.
Shut the fuck up.
Story time. I convinced our friend Jazzy here that I hated it.
Shut up.
Someone that seemed very happy about that. And I didn't stop. I mean, I made sure that it like sunk in, and then I revealed that I was joking. I'm kind of evil.
It sounds like there's a little spite going on there. I'm not trying to read into things too much.
Really? I can't tell.
Our relationship is built on.
That's true. I think our earliest film difference we had, which was fucking hilarious, was Space Jam.
Oh, yeah, because I thought Space Jam 2 was the biggest piece of shit I've seen in my life.
And I said that I kind of, like, enjoyed it a tiny bit.
Well, you're allowed to be wrong, Crystal.
I'm allowed to enjoy art
you're
that I know is bad.
You're allowed to be completely fucking wrong.
I went in expecting
you're a wrong Nick Wrongington, and that's okay.
I've still never seen either of those movies.
You haven't seen the original?
No.
You're not missing much.
I mean, you're not missing much.
I was a little too old to give much of a crap about Looney Tunes, and I never gave a crap about basketball. So, no, I didn't. Mean,
it is a perfect snapshot of the 90s.
But you know what? You don't need... You're not losing a very vital piece of American culture.
What do you mean? It should be in the Smithsonian.
Yes.
It belongs in a museum.
Full circle.
I think that's a good note to end on, honestly.
I don't think we'll do better.
No, I think we've peaked. This is peak internet right now. So thank you for listening to another episode of the Gals of Geekdom. Would you all like to plug your stuff? Lizzie, you wanna plug where people can find you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Lizzie Lemon Drop, where I complain about all the things you hear me complain about here. And you can follow me on TikTok at The Final Whore, where it's 90% just me doing gay memes with my girlfriend.
There's no better memes.
I agree.
Jazzy, where can people find you?
In the darkness. You can find me over at Lady Jazzington on Twitter, as well as Jazzy Oliver on YouTube. Also, you can find a lot of my voice work. You can find a complete portfolio of my voice work over at jazzyolivervo.com.
Vero, where can the good people find you?
Okay, I'll try and speed through this. It's way too much stuff. So you can find way more geeky related stuff under Council of Geeks on YouTube and Twitter. I also stream on Twitch 2 times a week. And if you are interested in my more gender fluid focused stuff and or somewhat spicier content, you can look for Vera Wilde, Wilde spelled W-Y-L-D-E, and you will find content on YouTube, on TikTok, on Twitter, and also some place that I hear is only for fans. I don't know what's up with that, but yeah, there too.
Definitely go check all that stuff out. And I am Crystal Williams. I am a writer. You can go to my Medium account and read the articles where I've written about social issues. And I did an article on Weird Al. So you can do that. You can follow me on Twitter at Crystal W. Rocks. And also, most of us here have methods in which you can donate to us. So I would recommend going to our respective links and stuff. And maybe if you like this, give us a little bit of money. That would be really nice.
I like money.
Yes. I think we all like money, unfortunately, under this capitalist system.
Well, I don't like it, but I'll take it.
Woohoo. I don't think there's a better way to wrap that up. This has been the Gals of Geekdom yet again. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week with some more new bullshit. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.